Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So welcome to another edition of the Chicago Way. This is John Cash, your mild-mannered columnist from a great metropolitan newspaper. And, of course, Jeff Carlin, the executive producer of The Rokan Show. Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
And who's with us but the amazing columnist in his own right, Will Lee, former AKA Old School, now William Lee.
Ooh.
Hey, man.
How you doing, sir?
What's up?
I feel great.
All right, so let's get into this. We're going to have Gary McCarthy later in the show to talk about the politics of what's going on with this police department in Chicago. But first, you know, this thing that happened in Milwaukee. All right, we have a Chicago police officer's son shot by gangbangers. We had, I think, three protesters showed up at a microphone, right, to say it was a terrible thing. A gangbanger with a gun points it apparently at a Milwaukee police officer who is... Black Lives Matter. This guy was a black police officer, and immediately, the neighborhood, he shoots the kid, points a gun at the police officer. The neighborhood starts to burn. What is going on? And then the typical media whitewash of real problems and real issues happen. Let's examine. This is distilled, and you can hear it on the cuts we have that Jeff will play. The first is from CNN casting the sister of the dead man as she wants peace in the neighborhood. Let's hear it.
His family and friends holding a vigil marked by prayers.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done.
With his sister calling for peace.
Don't bring the violence here and the ignorance here.
Milwaukee police say they made multiple arrests overnight. We're still waiting on those final numbers. It comes on top of the 17 arrests made Saturday night.
Now, that was the first cut where the sister is saying, don't bring the violence here, and characterized as, let's have peace. Now, let's see, hear what she really said and what CNN cut out.
Tell his mama y'all sorry for her loss. Burning down ain't gonna help nothing. Y'all burning down we need in our community. Take that to the suburbs. Burn that shit down. We need our weed. I don't wear it, but we need it. We need our gas.
Right.
We need our food. Mm-hmm. Y'all don't understand that. We need that. Y'all want to hurt somebody, take that further out. Don't bring it here.
Take it out to the suburbs, burn their shit down. Is not to me. So in other words, there's a racial component there, even though I don't think she said the word white or I didn't hear it.
No.
The deal is go to the white neighborhoods, burn that shit down. Don't burn our shit. We need weave, even though she doesn't use weave.
Which I give her props for defending her character.
I know that whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
From Will working with me and before in my life, do not touch the hair. I understand.
I've seen enough desperate
But housewives. Don't burn my house down, yeah. Honey. And what is with the media taking selective cuts to make her look like Miss, you know, the peace Nick, and not let's burn the neighborhood, the white neighborhoods down. When you don't do that, when you selectively cut, there's this thing called the internet. So it's all out there on these whack, far right internet sites, and it breeds suspicion, contempt, and fear when they cut stuff out. I think it's unconscionable, and CNN apologized, but I still think they got a big fat mutsa, so fisai thore, I'm right here. Nah, I cut out the bad word.
I appreciate that.
Because I want to, you know, censor myself. Now, I heard a rumor before the show that you were going to take the counter position and tell me to my face that it's okay to take out the burn the, their no, shit down thing.
No. That's not exactly true. What I am defending is I think this is more systemic of an issue that's we've talked about in the past about how the crumbling nature of journalism because of things like cable news and because of you have money evaporating from real journalism that happens on the ground by journalists who work for, generally speaking, historically speaking, newspapers. So now you've got a journalist who, quote-unquote, is standing in front of a camera and working with a producer like myself, but a producer who has no scruples, has no training beyond the fact that they know how to cut audio and they know how to cut video.
Somebody at the headquarters is telling that kid, nah, we don't want – the kid
I don't think so, John.
Here's the tape. Wait, okay. These kids grow up on all this video stuff. He's got the sister of the – of the dead guy, who, you know, the victim or whatever he's not victim, I guess you'd call him. And she's saying, let's burn their shit down. And you don't think that the kid knew that would, the young producer, if there is one, not a grizzled old guy like me, but a young guy like you, Will, knows that that's hot video and that they should use it? Why don't they use it?
You know, my take on this whole thing is also just, you know, and just from having done this for a while, you know, not as long as you, John, but...
Okay, Methuselah.
I guess the point is, of course, a part of any story like this, you want to go to the family. But I think my whole issue is how important are the words of a relative when this story is so much bigger than just the individual and all of that. We're going and asking...
So you're offering to modify and cut it out, too.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, it's
there?
How we cover it. How do we cover this? And
right.
Why is the comments of a sister of this person so important to everything Hinge? These are bigger issues here than how her family is feeling and all of that with respect to her family, because they must be going through everything. But
yes, they are bigger. I have to interrupt.
But, right.
They are bigger issues.
Sure.
But if she had said, let's have Pete, let's not. My brother was wrong to point a gun at a police officer. And even though we have been subject to 50 decades of Democratic Party plantation destruction as an inner-city African-American, I would suggest that we don't burn people. That would be good.
Sure.
Then you would quote her. But if she says, burn the white suburbs down, we selectively cut that out.
Burn the suburbs. You didn't
burn
say
these suburbs.
You know what she meant.
I know what she meant. John, I think this is a symptom of a problem that started before and has come from the fact that people have tried to whitewash and try to tweak messages. But then you have people, young people, because I see it here in this building for people I work with who see something and they're used to a narrative being a certain way. And so then as soon as they get to that point and they hear that person say that, that's the club. That's the cut. They've got 10 seconds of audio.
They've been turned into propagandists by the left.
And unintentionally. I mean, they're
that's
not,
how it works.
They're not seeing the big picture. They're not seeing. I don't think somebody selectively said, hey, cut out the burn part because that's irrelevant.
Sorry.
I see it, John. I see people in this building who I work with miss the bigger picture, miss the pieces surrounding cuts like that because they're used to saying this is the narrative. Oh, I feel that narrative. Here we go. I'm moving on. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's not on purpose. They're not trying to further anything. They're just trying to further what they think is assuming is the audio to be because it's they try to turn this stuff around so fast that the editorial nature of whoever is on the ground, and it's usually a producer, it's usually someone who's young, who's cutting this stuff, especially for a field reporter who's got to do a stand-up there, it's somebody who's right there saying, hey, this is what it was, let's put it up there.
Right.
And I think it's with cutbacks and with the companies hiring people younger and younger trying to save money.
And it's also politically correct, and it's also, let's not say anything that'll get us blowback, because that's exactly what it would have done. If a reporter had come with that quote, the first thing an editor would say, no matter what medium, is, what do I do with this now? Because it's not part of the script. It's not a kumbaya piece. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like the father, when Will and I were working together, that father or stepfather in Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
Remember his nutty stuff? He was saying nutty stuff, too.
Burn
the shit down.
Well, that's my point. It's going toward the family, and what you were just saying is valid in that, you know, just for people who are not journalists, they're on the outside and saying, you know, people kind of think they know what the answer is going to be, and they know what the usual answer is going to be, but these are, you know, hot developing situation. So you're going to get people who are hot, and that should all be understood. But, you know, just sticking a microphone in front of a person and saying, like, that this person's going to provide real meaning, I think that's kind of what it's the problem there.
Well, I think if we don't like the real meaning that they're giving us, we'll come up with answers so we don't have to hear it.
Agreed.
If they're giving us meaning that we like, we'll hear it.
Yeah.
All right. Either way, the fact is that there is there are two underlying stories to me. One is, again, to me, a criminal civil rights violation of the Democratic Party against African Americans in inner cities over the years. Crappy schools, no jobs, taxes, connections, crime, all of it. These are systems that are supporting the middle class, who then administer to the poor, but the poor don't get anything.
Right.
And why do you think they get angry? Because they don't get anything.
And the same people who take who are the intermediaries who line their pockets with elk heads and
elk heads, and
Jackson memorabilia. The same people were out in front saying, "Oh, things have to change."
They always say they have to change at home. It's like, yeah, I don't know if there are any homes.
And I'm not saying at home like the people who live in the neighborhoods who are getting, you know, abused by this stuff. I'm talking about the people who are collecting elk heads and memorabilia.
Oh yeah, well, you know, they're just phonies. Listen, guys, before we continue, I put out a picture of one of my favorite paintings, Nighthawks by Edward Hopper, and then a top to a Facebook post saying, having a cup of coffee before going to record another episode of the Chicago Way with Jeff Carlin. Any questions, post them here. So let me read you two and you guys answer first. Here's one from Dave Hucker. I know in the modern era, everyone is redefining language, but shouldn't we call most reporters by a different name if they don't report honestly anymore? Present company accepted, of course, because you always tell it like it is. Thank you, dude. Have they no shame? I'll hang up and wait for your answer. Sweet. But
let's take that
What about the point,
I'll
Jeff?
Dead on. And that's more to my point, is that you have this cable news, quote unquote, and the emphasis is on turn it around quickly and turn it around so people will watch. And both CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, you name it, they're all guilty of this. The editorial journalism is not there. There's no one watching and making sure that there's any sort of parity there. And they all have agendas. They all have – it's not even necessarily agendas. They have these communities, or they have this culture within these facilities, and draws in like-minded producers and reporters and editors. And they feel the same way about things, and that bias influences what they do. I think if you really want news, you got to go to on-the-ground journalists. You got to go to reporters at newspapers.
Newspapers are news, and the other is broadcast news.
Right. And I think anybody who takes news from that, if you're relying on CNN to give you what's really happening in the world, minus live video from an event that's happening because they have that kind of coverage, you're foolish.
What do you think of Mr. Dave Hucker's comment, Will?
Well, I think the idea of, you know, you have to ask yourself what a reporter is. And a lot of people now are, you know, in this new world are passing themselves off reporters if they're bloggers or that sort of thing. And not to, you know, come down on bloggers, because some reporters are bloggers. But it's being a reporter means going after the story and trying to chase it down and try to get the details as it is instead of not offering your opinion. Without the opinion. There are people, reporters, who have
Well, then we wouldn't have political coverage, because now the entire now it's okay for reporters to give their opinion if they don't like the candidate, right?
Right. Well, that's like the Trump. That's the whole thing. That's what Twitter is. Now Twitter is a bunch of reporters giving their opinions on various things. And sometimes I feel so uncomfortable doing that, because I have plenty of reporters' opinions, but I keep them to myself. That's not something, you know, we are in this sort of frame where we think that, you know, we have to share our opinions with people. That's what it is. And it's like, no, this is what the situation is, as the details as I have them. And now you can make your mind up, you know, without me having to give you what my take is.
Will is in the twilight zone here between straight reporting and column writing, which he does very well.
Yes.
And he's in that mode of which way am I walking? But either one requires quotes, thoughtful analysis, and writing with authority. But you don't have to be somebody's meat puppet.
Right. You have to have the history.
So if the woman says, my ruling, the woman says burn it down, that's part of the story because she's the family.
That's the story.
I'm sorry that people, you know, they do that little queasy voice. Too bad. That's part of what's going on. Here's another one from Tom Maddich. John Cass, I just subscribed to your podcast, The Chicago Way, looking forward to several hours of enjoyable listening. I only hope that one day your podcast will develop into a TV show similar in format to the sports writers on TV.
I love the sports writers on TV.
Yeah, I do too.
What do you think?
I love it.
How would Will, the theater of the mind, Jeff Garlin, how would Will look on the sports writers on TV?
Will would be awesome. Did you ever see, what's the one on ESPN where they used to do the boxes and they would have, like, throw guys out and they would narrow it down to, like, one guy? Oh, God, look at the name of it. But Will would be great. I could see him in, like, you know, in a picture box with three other people.
Definite Billy D. Williams of, like, 28 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool looking.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like that great decathlete that's out there now. You know, that American. Mm-hmm. Like, totally cool, 100%. Stylish. Would you wear a hat?
I don't think so. I don't wear hats indoors.
You don't wear hats indoors. Right. Good. Jeff would be kind of what? Would you be the guy in tweeds?
No, I'd be the guy in, like, some really fancy, like, stripped down suit.
Like Hugo Boss.
And I'd be moderating. And
oh, yeah.
I'd be the guy.
So, in other words, you wouldn't take a position. You would just,
right. I would just try to.
You wouldn't be our own personal Skip Bayless?
No. I would be the guy, so at the end of it, I would, like, summarize and then throw in, like, my 2 cents, and then we go to a commercial. That would be me.
And I'm the guy with the chalky Olympics T-shirt, right?
Right, exactly,
With the beard.
You would be the guy with the tweed and the...
Oh, no.
Smoking a cigar.
In my mind, I'm Walter Pigeon, but no one knows who that is.
No, sorry,
right?
John.
That's okay. That's all right. Speaking of journalism, Brian Williams. Brian Williams is getting his own show on MSNBC. He lies like Hillary under sniper fire, and now he's back delivering the news. How does that work, gentlemen?
Tumbleweeds.
More time.
Oh, yes. Hat tip to McLaughlin.
Hat tip to Mr. McLaughlin. Yeah.
Oh,
next issue.
Jeff Carlin.
Go.
Brian Williams. Jeff.
Yes.
If you please, sir.
Yeah, if you please. I don't care. I mean, I honestly don't care. He embellished his stories, which is, again, it's about TV news versus real news. And I think if anybody is listening to Brian Williams, even beforehand, and it's a tragedy because a lot of people were, especially millennials, you know, when that 30 Rock show or Rock 30 Center or whatever it was, if you were taking for what everything he was saying about the news as, you know, the word and actual true journalism, it's foolish.
Wait a minute.
I know.
He's the anchor. He was the anchor of the NBC nightly news.
Absolutely. But we've talked about this before. I mean, you have, even locally.
I just tweeted this out, a picture of him saying, Brian Williams in his suit, you know, at the anchor desk. And then King Arthur says to me, hey, Brian, pass me the WD-40. I think I could get the sword loose. Will Lee.
No, I guess what it comes down to is, I guess he's still more popular than anticipated, even besides this scandal. We're in a different time now, as I keep saying. Before, this may have killed his career 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
But
if you go back even further, probably.
Right. Oh, absolutely. It would have been the end of his career. But now, because he still is enough of a name and maybe people still like him, there are enough people out there who like him, they can still salvage his career and money can be made off
of
him.
It's all about money. He nailed it. It's all about money.
He's a journalist equivalent of the Geek Show.
He's a handsome man who can tell you what's quote-unquote happening.
Right.
Come see Brian Williams biting the heads off chickens. That's what it is.
Yeah.
All right. And everyone, you know, these kids, they, hey, John, I don't watch the news. I get my news from the Jon Stewart show.
Which
got, okay, you stupid piles of goo.
Yeah, but that show, I think, had more editorial integrity than a lot of news shows out there, than actual news shows, about covering both things, trying to cover both pieces. Now, granted, obviously, there's a left swing there.
I don't mind. It's not the left. It's a comedy show.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to get your news from comedy and process that.
But that's...
I remember Jon Stewart with Barack Obama.
Sure.
And Jon Stewart left, like, several puddles on the carpet.
Yeah.
Okay?
Absolutely.
He's not a news guy. If you put Will Lee with Barack Obama, Will Lee, even though he might like him or not or see the historical significance or not, of the first African-American president, would sit there and treat him like a journalist would.
Sure.
Which would be like, hey, what's going on?
Exactly.
Right?
But that's because it's Will Lee. And,
right.
You know,
exactly.
That guy.
You are just so cool.
Which
Colt 45.
He
is cooler than Billy D, isn't he?
He is.
Like, better than Lando Calrissian here at my table.
Let's not go crazy.
Your handshake story, Will. We were talking about this before we started taping, but the gang handshake, the fake handshake.
Oh,
that's
great
the story that I was a column rather. It was awesome. Like, if you have read one thing this week or weekend after listening to the podcast, go out and check out Will's story on his fake gang handshake.
Yes. Thank you.
One thing about that column, Will, you didn't tell us enough about the older gangbanger who saved your life.
Right. You know, I wasn't really paying that much attention to him at the time, to be perfectly honest. It was the young sort of, if you could think of a young black kid as Jimmy Cagney from those 30s movies. He was the tough. He had far more, like, sort of street swag than I ever had. He was a rougher, tougher, you know. You could just kind of feel it from him, and I was just some nerd to it. And I really did the handshake just because I was just like, well, they're questioning me. I just want this over with. I'll get an A for effort for having given it a try. That did not happen. And it was when I was reading Hindman's story, David Hindman's original story about how the whole thing had broken down, it made this memory sort of bubble up. I hadn't even really thought about it in years. But it kind of just goes to show the thing I've been seeing on the street really as a reporter for the last few years. Everything is just kind of falling apart. There are no gangs in the way that they were when I was a kid or even when you were a kid, John. You know,
I'm working on a piece now. I probably should tell the readers on then and now, because then wasn't so great. Okay?
Sure.
I'm just saying. We'll get into it later as I research it. But yeah, I was there. Then and now.
We were the northernmost Americans in Iraq. We were going to drop some bridge portions across the Euphrates so the 3rd Infantry could cross on them. Two of our four helicopters were hit by ground fire, including the one I was in.
No kidding.
RPG and AK-47.
Oh, yes, he's the great pretender. Pretending in RPG. His need is such, he pretends too much, though no one would call bullshit. Oh, yes, he's a great pretender. Agrees with Gruber that we're dumb. He played the game, and it's such a shame. Once respected, he's now just a bum. Too real is this feeling we've been lied to. What else has he said to us that's just not true? Oh, yes, he's the great pretender. Just laughing at all. He made it up to get more pub, misremembering the day way back when, pretending he almost...
We're talking to Superintendent McCarthy. A lot's going on right as we speak, former superintendent. The inspector general is investigating more about the Laquan McDonald shooting. We've got 7 police officers apparently being fired who were involved in that, at least in some aspect of a cover-up. You're being investigated now. I already thought you were the fall guy for the first thing. What's going on? What do you make of all that?
Well, first of all, I didn't know I was being investigated, but I have no fear regarding that. John, I'm really confused because you never, ever, ever in 35 years of police work, I've never heard of proceeding with an administrative case while you have a criminal case pending. So in other words, the IG's investigation is not criminal in nature. It's administrative, to my understanding. In other words, now saying that we're going to fire some officers based upon whether their statements were perjury or not jeopardizes a criminal case. You know, I don't understand why all the rules have been thrown out the window now. When I was asked after I was fired, whether or not I endorsed releasing or not releasing the tape. I went with the standard police policy, which is you do not reveal evidence in an ongoing criminal investigation. It was not our investigation. It was IPRA, the FBI, the U.S. attorney, and the state's attorney conducting that investigation. But if I were asked, I would have said that we should not release the tape because we don't release evidence in criminal cases that are ongoing. If it's a murder case and John Q. Citizen is being charged with murder. So apparently the rules no longer apply. If these officers are determined administratively to have lied, then the criminal case is going to be affected with their testimony. You follow what I'm saying? I don't understand it. And you always want to preserve the criminal case first.
Do you think that
you don't want to jeopardize that?
Do you think that the officers lied to you and your top command? Because it looks from the reports that Inspector General Ferguson's going up the ladder to see how your top command reacted to that Laquan shooting and the information that was being processed by the other police officers. Do you think they lied to you?
Well, I didn't speak to them, so I can't say that anybody lied to me. My presentation regarding the facts and circumstances of the shooting came from Dave McNaughton, who has now retired.
Right.
Beyond that, I didn't have any other involvement except to strip that officer the next day, which I'd like to say again publicly was the only legal action that I could actually take was right. to strip him of his police authority. And then when he was charged, I believe he went into a no pay status. But according to Illinois state law, that was the only action that could be taken. So, I'm thoroughly confused as to what's going on around here right now. There seems to be rules are make them up as you go. And the previous policies that we always adhere to are not being adhered to.
It sounds like, and I've only been doing covered politics for 600 years, about as long as you've been chasing murderers. But it sounds to me like I'm looking at another edition of Chicago Way politics at City Hall, where you're being now it's sort of like it's more of a political response than a investigative response. What do you say?
I do agree with that. I do agree with that. And the thing that I've been saying is that there are not political solutions for practical problems. And the practical problems that we have revolve around social issues. You know, one of the things that I've been saying is that the anger that exists in those disenfranchised communities that are beset by poverty, lack of education, breakup of the family unit, bad health care, lead in the water, rampant narcotics and crime, just to name a couple of ills, that anger builds up towards a failed government system that is not serving those communities. And the most visible, most forward component of failed government is policing. And, if you look at the fact that there were 3,000 people shot in Chicago last year, and there were 19 police-related shootings, which, by the way, not every one of them was bad right. as far as being criminal in nature or outside of policy. That works out to 0.006% of the people shot in Chicago. Yet what we did was we threw out the baby with the bathwater. We turned over the table. And we're at a point now where we've got about 700 more people shot this year than shot last year at this point, and about 140 or more people killed this year in comparison to last year. So I'm confused. Where's the outrage regarding the crime rate in this city that I seem to be facing the entire time that I was there, including the 2 years that we set records going back to 1965? And there's not political solutions for this.
Well, it seems
there has to be practical solutions because in 2 years we're going to be having the same conversations.
It seems like there's so much to talk to you about, and I want to get into Milwaukee and just the nature of police command and just crime in general. But I do have to ask you, given the politics of all this now, when that Laquan McDonald, when that thing was first understood by police command, the mayor of Chicago, in my belief, made you the fall guy for this, went on publicly and said, "I never saw the video until the day it was released." Even though he sat on it to get through his reelection campaign and basically suppressed it. Is it your belief or understanding that Rahm Emanuel saw that video before he told the public that he saw it?
John, I can't say because I would be speculating. The only time that I know that Rahm Emanuel saw a police-related shooting video was when I brought it down to City Hall and presented it to him because I was outraged that we had an incident where it was a within-policy shooting by a police officer. It was deemed within policy, and there was a settlement given for $1.1 million, I believe, to the family of the individual who led the police on the chase, had committed a gunpoint robbery, assaulted officers, and then we turned around and gave them money. So that was done.
What case was that, Superintendent?
Through the law. Okay. Oh boy, I don't remember the name. Unfortunately, it was a chase. It was a female officer who did the shooting. But the point being, John, I did not show him that video. I don't know if he saw the video. I would be speculating if I said anything different. But what I can say is that the entire issue is handled by the law department and the corporation council. But you know, I just don't hear anything about that, quite frankly.
Well, I can't believe, and I don't think, and I've written it that he sat on it, and I can't believe that anybody in their right mind would think otherwise. That he, there's, I just know Rahm Emanuel over the years. He called you. I've one time we had a pool with some of the political guys in town that he called you on one day. I think it was 45 times within 3 hours. Is that true? Did he ever beat the record of 40 times within an hour?
No, he did not.
How many times did he call? How many times did he used to call you?
And text.
And text, yeah. That's Will.
A couple of times a day.
Oh, come on, man.
During the NATO summit, he called frequently to get updates on what was going on.
You used to get calls from him, like, between reps, between bench press reps, he would call you. Come on.
I'll say frequently, but it certainly wasn't 45 times an hour.
Okay, let's say it was definitely you could get 5 or 6 texts during the morning, right?
No, that's not true. You would call me in the morning to get an update on everything that had happened overnight. And then during the day, he might call once or twice, depending on what was going on an average day.
Because now we have a new policy. It's called the Chinese Wall Policy, Jeff Carlin. Can you tell the superintendent about this?
Gary, I'm sure you heard this yesterday, but Rahm is saying that he built a Chinese wall between the fifth floor and the rest of and the police, and that is he has no influence or limited influence over what Superintendent Johnson is doing. And he brought him in to do a job, and he's going to let him do the job. I don't buy that, but he said that yesterday. Was quoted saying a Chinese wall, which I think you might have misspoke, but I don't know. I'm sure that wall didn't exist when you were in charge.
Well, actually, the first demand that I made when he offered me the job was that I was really going to run the police department, and we were going to create a performance-based meritocracy. And quite honestly, he stuck to it. He agreed to it. He stuck to it. The places where the influence from City Hall comes in are in the law department with the general counsel of the police department, budget, because obviously we rely on them for budget, they're linked at the hip, and the other place is public information. We always had to be in lockstep with whatever it was coming out of City Hall. So those are three places where we were in lockstep, and that's where, unfortunately, there actually was political interference, quite frankly. But it didn't come from Rahm Emanuel, and it didn't come for directives to me from him. I literally made every decision myself. Sometimes I would have to justify them to him. Sometimes we would argue over them. But in the end, I always made the decisions, and I'm quite satisfied that except for those circumstances that I just gave you, between law, public information, and budget, there was very little meddling that happened in my tenure. When I would have individuals in my staff say, City Hall says, and I would always say the same thing. I would say, City Hall is a building. Who says? And they would tell me somebody, you know, said something to them from City Hall, and I would jump all over them. And the policy was really simple. If somebody in City Hall tells you to do something, you ask them if they spoke to me about it. And we were able to keep that pretty intact. But like I said, those other three areas were kind of different.
Well, now we have a situation where Eddie Johnson is replaced you. There's still problems in management there. It seems like the firing those seven police officers, and then we have the other two out of three, at least, that might go from the shooting, you know, the car chase shooting. What kind of problems is Johnson facing with respect to morale? I wonder how you get these police officers' morale up with all this going on.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's really difficult. And you know, I tell people all the time, and I mean it, I wish I still had that job in spite of what's happening right now, because, you know, in those toughest instances is when you want to be at the helm. We had a plan to address what was happening, not only crime-wise, but creating a more functional police department. Obviously, the politics of it were very difficult. And honestly, John, talking about politics, mm-hmm. one of the things that I struggled with was the fact that aldermen did not wield the power within the department that they were accustomed to having. And as a result, many of them became disenchanted with Gary. Let's say that. Because previously, and you know this, they would sometimes pick their district commanders and people would get promoted. People would get promoted based upon those relationships.
Right.
And I said very simply, I said, if you are accountable for their behavior, if you're accountable for their performance, then you can pick them. But unfortunately, I'm accountable for their performance, and therefore I will do it.
And you came in at a time after, here's my theory on this, and this is not about criticizing your predecessor, but my theory on this is that Jody Weiss came in, didn't know the makeup of the Chicago, and hadn't worked in a big city police department. Daley got him to change all 25 police districts at once. That threw command into chaos. And then you come in later, the situation is still chaotic because of that. How much of a problem did that cause you? It's settled.
Well, the culture hasn't settled because, you know, I think that we had 4 years of building a better functioning, more of a performance-based police department where career paths were defined. We defined how you get ahead in the department. We tried to promote the right people based upon their understanding of the policies and their execution of the policies. And I think we did a pretty good job. But, you know, it's like turning around an aircraft carrier. I think that most of those systems are now gone from the department, you know, and you know, as a result, that chaos ensues. People don't. In the department don't feel that the administration has their back. You know, every police officer I see basically says two things to me. They say, man, do we miss you? And B, if that's what they did to you, what would they do to me if I make a mistake? So, you know, that is the sentiment that I keep hearing over and over again. And that goes against legitimacy. And that's the other thing. You know, everybody talks about police legitimacy. It's something that we were working towards. You need legitimate government to have a legitimate police department. And, you know, I'm not sure that anybody believes that we have that in the city of Chicago.
Okay, wait a minute. I've believed that for quite some time. To hear you say it, though, it's kind of newsy. Why don't you think that City Hall or the government in Chicago is legitimate?
Well, you take the example that when I became the police superintendent, I went through the process of the police board, and the process is defined by municipal law how the police superintendent is selected, which is the police board does a search, which they did. They come up with three candidates, and they present them to the mayor. And the law says that if the mayor doesn't like the results of that search, he throws out the search, and they have to do another search until they come back with people who the mayor likes, and he selects one. In the case of Eddie Johnson, who I love dearly, by the way, I promoted him twice in my tenure in 4 years, Eddie didn't apply for the job. The mayor apparently didn't like the results of the search, so the city council changed the law for one day so he could appoint whoever he wants to. The idea of having the process in place is to create legitimacy. So if you can just circumvent it, look, I didn't let aldermen pick their district commanders, right?
Not even in Chinatown.
In this case, I'm sorry?
Not even in Chinatown.
Nowhere did I do that. And it caused some people's eyebrows to go up. When I put Leo Schmitz, a white man, in Englewood, it was wholesale, what are you doing? Yet I didn't hear the same uproar when I sent Jimmy Jones up to Edgewater. It was the first time that there was a black commander north of Division Street, I think, since the early 60s, or maybe even ever, I'm not sure. But at the end of the day, when you throw out process, you can't have legitimacy, and that's what happened with Eddie's appointment. And by the way, like I said, I love Eddie. I think he's phenomenal. I think that he's in a real tough position. And if you're going to have police legitimacy, you have to have government legitimacy.
Superintendent, this is Will Lee calling. If we can go back for a second about the Laquan McDonald video, and you stated earlier that you don't believe in releasing video during criminal investigations when taken. But let me ask you: since that's happened, there have been a number of instances where the video has been released. Most recently in the Paul O'Neill shooting, when IPRA released the video, and just yesterday when they released Chicago Police released a cam video of a. An insane chase where a police officer was grazed. Right. Do you believe that there could be some positivity as far as, you know, the public understanding what you guys go through in releasing these videos? Like, surely you don't want to hamper an ongoing criminal case. But when you have a situation like this now where cops' actions are constantly questioned, releasing those videos could be your defense, you know, far more than it could probably, you know, impediment to cops who are breaking the law, that sort of thing. Agree with that?
Absolutely, I do. But the part of the problem is, is there a difference between releasing the video today and when a prosecution is completed? Because if you think about it, we would have a conveyor belt going back 2 years. We'd be releasing videos from 2 years ago. And I'm not sure that the difference between releasing them today or releasing them at the end of the criminal case is really going to make a difference as far as trust goes in the short term. But it may make a difference in whether or not we're getting good prosecutions. And I'm not sure that it's worth that risk. And I just want to say this. You know, people have been talking about the fact that we want videos released immediately, okay? And I'm telling you that the reason why we don't want it to happen is that we don't want to jeopardize those prosecutions. But, you know, just because people want it doesn't mean it's a good idea. And I can give you the best example that I could think of, because it's very personal to me. Mm-hmm. Communities in this country want civilian oversight of police departments. Well, here in Chicago, we have it with the police board. The police board handles disciplinary cases of 30 days or more suspension or termination. And during my tenure, they overturned 3 out of 4 of my separation cases. In other words, I recommend somebody get separated. They did not get separated 75% of the time. So we have civilian oversight. Communities also want outside investigations into police uses of force. Well, here in Chicago, we have that. IPRA was conducting the investigation, went right to the FBI, and took it right to the U.S. attorney, which is another thing that people want in these communities across the country. They want federal investigations. So in Chicago, we had civilian oversight, outside investigations, and a federal investigation, which, by the way, I still haven't heard anybody mention the fact that, to my knowledge, and I may have missed it, the federal grand jury has concluded in the Laquan McDonald Jason Van Dyke case. I don't think it's concluded. I think it's still ongoing. Well, those are three things that people wanted in Chicago or in these communities across the country. We have it. And then when you don't like the result, we're outraged and the police chief gets fired. It happened in San Francisco with Greg Sir. It happened in Baltimore with Tony Batts. So just because people want it
here.
Doesn't mean it's always the right thing to do.
It happened here in Chicago with
you. Oh, I heard that. Yeah.
I just didn't want you to skip that.
Yeah.
So,
but you see what I'm saying? Just because people want it doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. That's why we have attorneys in this world, is that they can debate and figure out the best way to do it under the law.
Superintendent McCarthy, the fall guy for Rahm Emanuel, and the guy who always protected his police against City Hall, thank you for joining us to talk about other stuff, like, okay?
Well, I'm going to be here, John.
All
thanks,
right.
Will. I'm not leaving Chicago. As I recently told, I don't know if you heard, Kathy Lanier the police chief in D.C. just took over NFL security. And I was speaking with her last night, congratulating her, and she said, "Hey, are you staying in Chicago?" I said, "Yeah, I'm staying on the Titanic, absolutely."
Are you staying? Are you going to be here till?
Most likely. My wife is due on October 9th.
Right. You live in Chicago.
We don't plan on going anywhere.
You live in Chicago 2019, something's going to happen.
I hope not.
All right.
I hope not.
We'll get to that another time.
A number of people have mentioned that to me in the past.
And what do you tell them when mention, for those, even though our listeners here on the Chicago Way, it's the mayor?
I've lived a very stressful life up to this point, 57 years old. I'm about to have a baby. I am in my second year of my second marriage, and I'm very, very happy the way my life is going right now. I'm trying to adjust to not having as much stress as I've had for the last 35 years. But all things considered, I love this city and I'm staying here. And, maybe it's my turn to make some money and hopefully succeed in business.
You've just given stress to the rest of the Chicago police. They're going to be at Gene and Giorgetti tomorrow in Erie Cafe, and they're going to pound it down Manhattan's talking about the show.
I'm smart enough to never say never, Chris. I've seen a whole bunch of really crazy things, but I can tell you I'm really not interested in politics. It's not in my makeup genetically because I'm not good at making deals. I dig in my heels on principles, sometimes on minor issues, and I'm not sure that I would be very good at politics.
It's that stubborn Irishman thing in you, okay? So if somebody
if
somebody in politics says, "Hey, why don't you meet me in Chinatown for spaghetti dinner at midnight?" My advice to you, former superintendent, okay?
Sounds like a plan.
All right, see you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ed. Bye.
Bye. Interesting interview with Gary McCarthy. I'm sure you enjoyed the column that I wrote about it. Now that you see, even though it's like I'm in the time warp, like that TV show where I'm back in time, forward in time.
Right.
You're adapting.
Mr. Will Lee, are you going to see that movie with Jeff Bridges, the Come Hell or High Water, or Ben-Hur?
I don't know. I've been very disappointed with the movies as of late with Hollywood. I don't know. I've been stuck in a time where watching old movies from the 80s and 70s, and I say, man, that's how you make a movie. Chinatown's how you make a movie.
48 Hours.
48 Hours is how you make a movie. Die Hard is how you make a movie.
Right.
I would say Shane is how you make a Western.
The right. Chain die at the end.
Shane.
Did he die at the end?
Mother, want you, want you, want you, want you.
Was he
remember
dead?
That thing?
Yeah, I know.
Shane, no, he didn't die. He just rode off on his horse, and the horse was on boxes to make it taller.
I know.
Because he was only 5'7". Kind of like Rom, who got chopped down a little bit by Gary McCarthy today.
Boom.
Ooh, right? Illegitimate government.
Well, he did.
I might run for mayor.
I'm not ruling it out.
I wouldn't rule it out. Come on, Jeff. And the last thing I got to say is I want to thank everybody who's been sending me pictures of your tomatoes and posting it on the tomato website or the tomato gallery, including the ugly tomatoes that people are posting. I had two Brandywines. They look like...
deformed?
They look like Tyrion Lannister's butt. Okay, they were weird looking. They were kind of... oh.
Thanks for the visual there, John.
I'm just saying.
It's also the name of my
cat, doing
the
binge-watching again. I'm going back to Game of Thrones watching...
It's only two more seasons. Can you imagine... all right, so we didn't really get a hash after this series.
Right.
This season ended. Mm-hmm. But so only two more seasons, and the next one's only going to be like 7 episodes?
Yes.
Catastrophe.
I don't mind as long as each episode is 2 hours long.
Right. There you go.
We got to get to
it. These 40-minute episodes.
The problem is when you know it's over, then people are going to start dissing it now to step because they need emotional separation from the final one.
That's what happens in a breakup. Mm-hmm. You know you're breaking up with her. She starts ripping on you before you finally break up and you let her because it's the end. Not that I would ever break up with Betty, although she almost assaulted me with a
cucumber
vegetable peeler.
Oh, my God.
Because I grew, I don't know, 7,000 pounds of cucumbers, and I said, hey, honey, let me take a picture of you making the preparing cucumber soup. And she said, don't. I have a knife, even though it was a vegetable peeler.
A blade.
Cucumber soup. This is how screwed up I am. I could have made tzatziki.
Yeah.
Right? Garlic. That's all you need. Garlic, yogurt, and cucumbers. Salt and pepper. What do? Cucumber soup. Because I've always wanted to live that, you know, Protestant life, like in the 20s. You know what I mean?
Cucumber sandwiches?
I'm kind of, yeah. You butter the sides of the bread, and then you roll it in chives.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
That sounds absolutely suburban.
It is so suburban, which is why I moved there. And thank you again, Will Lee. I don't know why I even hang out with you, man.
I think you do.
Will Lee from the Chicago Tribune. Nascent, excellent columnist, Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the Ro Con Show with Anna DeVellantis, and yours truly, Mr. Cass Casso with the cowboy hat on, the Chicago way. See you again.